Hello, and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast with Rob and Jason.
Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, November 24th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 130. My name's Rob, that's Jason, howdy.
Hey,
I'm getting good at this intro thing, aren't I?
Yeah, after 130 episodes.
You screwed one up in like 7 or 8 episodes.
Yeah. It's amazing how that happens.
I'm pretty awesome, what can I say?
Yeah,
how are you?
Doing all right.
Drinking your Gatorade.
Yeah, this is my G2. Whatever number it is. I don't know what number it is.
It's G8.
They started...
I don't know.
They started... It's G8-a-raid. I don't know. They started this new thing where they like number them or something.
Yeah, they did that. Started that several years ago.
Yeah.
I don't... Whatever, marketing.
I don't know. Anyways. Mm-hmm. I haven't drank this in a while. It's been in my fridge for a while, but hey, it still tastes fine.
Yeah.
Lots of preservatives in it, I'm sure, so...
Electrolytes, man. It's all about the electrolytes.
There's no taurine in here, right?
No taurine.
Like in
taurine, so delicious.
You don't even know what that is.
Huh?
You don't even know what taurine
is. Yeah, I do.
What is taurine?
Well, real taurine is some kind of a product made from bull bile. For real.
And sounds great.
Yeah. It's taurine, like... Yeah, like a bull, right.
Like
yeah, so
Taurus,
it's,
the bull.
Yeah. So it's an extract or purification or some kind of something, some chemical that's in bull bile. But and that's if you buy real Thai Red Bull, if you ever see that advertised somewhere, that means it has real taurine in it.
Have you ever tried that before?
I've not. I'm afraid to. All the stuff that you buy normally around here is synthetic taurine.
I'd try real taurine. Why not?
Yeah.
What the heck?
I mean...
What's the worst that could happen?
Turn into a bull?
That'd be kind
of
sweet.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the beginning of genetic mutations.
Newest episode of Grimm, like some dude actually is a bull.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Punching stuff.
Yeah, there's that new video game coming out called Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah.
It's on Xbox. People grow into monsters because they drink too many energy drinks.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we're talking about here.
The commercial for that game looks awesome.
Yeah, I've heard good stuff
about
it.
It's like the hero is me. No, it's not me. Oh, it's you. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I hear good stuff. I'm not going to buy an Xbox One, but...
Oh, it's just for Xbox?
Yeah.
It's too bad because I saw the game and I thought you would probably think that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So what's new?
Well, I haven't been playing much, but I did, there was a holiday bazaar at my church.
Mm.
It was a craft show and the tables were only $25. And I was like, my wife is actually, you should sell your game there. I was like, all right. I mean, like I guarantee I'm the only one that's going to have a game there.
Right.
Like,
yeah. A lot of crafts,
yeah.
A lot of baked goods.
But Josiah got at this craft show, got a knitted hat, like a winter hat.
Mm-hmm.
That's Leonardo. From the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. It's like, it looks like a turtle head. I mean, it's just green, right?
Knitted
green cap with like two huge eyeballs on it.
Yeah.
And then like the blue bandana. And the blue bandana actually comes off the side and like hangs down, like separate from the head.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. He gets a lot of compliments.
Yeah.
He's pretty excited. He loves to wear it.
That's pretty great.
So,
man, Ninja Turtles really had a comeback, haven't they?
They did.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the movie was terrible from what I heard.
Right.
But, like,
but it kind of fueled a resurgence in OG turtle popularity.
Right. Reminded people, because it was like, people were like, wait, the turtles are cool. This movie sucked, but I remember why the turtles are cool now.
Right.
So, you know, let's go with that.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I go to this craft show, right? And the table was $25. So I was doing my con prices, which are... one for 15, two for 20.
I'm
trying to encourage people to buy two copies.
Yeah.
Ahead of time, my goal was to sell 3 copies so that I could pay for the table and have a little gravy left over. Not much, but like if I sold 3 copies, that'd be $35.
Yeah.
I'd make $10, right? Mm-hmm. Sure, whatever. At least I didn't sit there for nothing. But my kind of goal was like sell 6 copies, right?
Mm-hmm.
$60. I feel like I did something good, right? I sold 17 copies.
Whoa.
I know, right?
Dude, you texted me in the middle of the day. You're like, oh my gosh, I sold 12 copies. Oh my gosh. And you're so excited. 17.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
So to turn that on its head, right, like as a comparison, At Grand Con for 3 days, I sold 30 copies, seven of which were wholesale to one place. So, I mean, nothing against Grand Con. I mean, it was like, you know, it's funny because it was interesting because when I first went in, I thought, you know, man, like this stinks because nobody else has games.
Yeah.
But that actually helped me because I was the only one with a game, right? Mm-hmm. So, well, a lot of old people were like, what are you doing, Sean? Mm-hmm. Watch this. And I'm like,
where are your cupcakes? You should be selling cupcakes.
Or knitted stuff.
Yeah.
Christmas ornaments. Or Mary Kay. The lady next to me was selling Mary Kay. Okay, so okay. The worst thing about it was they put me in a bad spot. Like, they put me on a corner next to the Mary Kay lady. Well, so, like, the Mary Kay lady, by the way, was awesome. She was a super nice lady. She actually bought two copies of my game. Oh, so nice. Good for her. But
did you buy any Mary Kay?
I did not. So, but what stunk was, like, Mary Kay is a table that some people will skip, right? Not because they don't like Mary Kay, but because, like, they're at a craft show. But they also, like, I mean, half of them would just be like, hey, and they'd wave at her because they knew the lady because she's, like, big in the community and doing Mary Kay, or so I'm told. Mm. Again,
she's,
not my
She's kind of
expertise.
A big deal, man.
She is, yeah. She's a nice lady. So so the problem was they would skip me and skip her.
Mm.
So, like, if I'd been in the middle, I think I could have sold even more copies. If I'd been between, like, somebody selling jam and somebody selling, like, some sort of Christmas decoration, I think I could have sold more games.
Yeah.
But because of where I was, I just, it was a little harder to get people's attention. But hey, I sold 17 copies, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, no complaints. That's great, man.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun just because it was only 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
They had good food there that was really cheap.
Yeah.
So
did you use your Square app thing again?
I did. And that was so, a lot of the crafty people were like, hey, what is that?
I was like,
this is a Square app, you know, and I was explaining it to him, and like, there's a friend of mine there who's from our church, and he does a lot of woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
I spent more money than we made. No, that's not true. We spent like $50 on these handcrafted cutting boards.
Uh-huh.
I'll show it to you before we leave. It's amazing. Like, it's all pressed together. It's different kinds of wood, so their colors are all different, matched together.
Cool.
And he was selling for like $25, which is insane. Like, that's the guy at Gen Con sold that, like,
nice,
$40 easy.
Nice quality cutting board, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially handmade.
Right, wow. Exactly, right? So, so anyways, he was really looking at it, and I was like, it's like, you should look into this if you're going to do this, because it's, you know, because somebody else was like, well, they take money away. And I'm like, dude, they take 1%. I'm like, and it's, I don't know if it's actually 1%, but I said, it's like 1%. And I said, and this is the thing, this is how awesome it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so good that small businesses, when you go in sometimes, they use those as their cash registers now. You don't notice it because it looks like they have an iPad for cash. Yopa, the yoga place we go to, does that.
Yeah.
And it's because they get a better rate than with the credit card companies.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So, like, it's totally legit. I mean, the money was in my account 2 days later. It's awesome.
That's
the
cool
only reason
stuff.
It took 2 days is because it was over the weekend. So, yeah. So that's my thing. So I was really happy with 17 copies. I'm going to hopefully, in the next few weeks here, I'm going to go through and I'm going to count my inventory because I was doing really good at keeping track and then I kind of lost that. So, which I knew I would, but I'm going to go through and count my inventory. I'd like to be able to give listeners like a total for how many I've sold it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'm guessing it's over 300 copies between the Kickstarter, of course, and that. Like, I think I'm down 300 plus copies. I really hope so. That's what I've been telling people. So,
hopefully you're not lying.
I feel like I'm not, but I could be. I mean, if I am, it's not on purpose. It's because I really feel like that's how many copies I've sold. So
that's cool, though.
But anyways, all right. So talk about yourself now and games and stuff. Yeah.
Well, played some more Cube Quest. Which,
man, I want to try that game.
The game is so good.
Somebody was on Twitter was like, Stephanie Straw was like, is this game any good? And I was like, oh my gosh, Rob loves that game.
If you look at the replies to her tweet, there were like 40 people who replied to her and saying, yeah, dude, that game. So I'm not alone.
Fanfare. I want to get it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's super fun.
You need to bring it to the next game night.
Yeah.
And then my wife can see it.
It's in
be like,
a couple weeks. We're doing that, right?
Two weeks. Yeah, it's the week after we get back from Florida.
Yeah. I want to just kind of vent some frustration here, if you don't mind. Oh, man. So much rage.
Let's talk about a mechanic.
Okay. Sorry. I played Cube Quest.
This week we're going to talk about, this week we're going to talk about positive player interaction. This is something that I'm not super familiar with. I know. Sorry, listeners. You're like, what? But no. TC Petty was talking about this on Something From Nothing. And so many of the ideas for mechanics I get from just TC randomly talking about stuff.
Yeah.
Because TC knows a lot about a lot of mechanics. It's just one of the things he knows about.
He's a smart guy.
Don't tell him I said that, though.
He'll never listen to this.
Yeah, but other people who know TC listen to this. Don't tell him I said nice stuff about him, because that guy's a jerk. Anyways, positive player interaction is the idea that rather than doing things that are negative to your other opponents, like mm-hmm. to your opponents, things I do help you do other things. So, like, I heard him talking about some different games where, like, one of them, they're building a city, and the idea is, like, I'm building, I'm in between two cities or something, that's the name of the game. Uh-huh. And so, like, you are and I are sharing a point between us, right? So if I do good stuff to that one on my left or my right, it helps the player to my left and my right, because that's theirs as well. And Puerto Rico was another game somebody said was a good example of that. So we're not going to try and list off games that do that. Though somebody did point out that Catan does that because of trading, because I give you cards so that you'll give me cards. And I guess I never thought about it that way. Like, that is that type of interaction. But I really like the idea of things I do mm-hmm. to help me directly benefit you.
Is that fun, though?
Well, yeah, because now instead of managing, like, how do I attack Rob? Mm-hmm. I say, who do I want to help the least? Like, who is in... This actually reminds me of Freaky Tiki, a game, a prototype that I had for a while that I was pulling around.
And, yeah.
In that game, you had to vote on who should get, like, who should be, like, the best person that round, or the... I don't remember what it was, because you're all trying to be the new chieftain.
Yeah.
It was like, who are you going to vote for this round? And you couldn't vote for yourself. So the idea was that... everyone always wanted to vote for the person in last place. But what was interesting about that was everybody voted for the person in last place, and what mm-hmm. happened? Suddenly the person in last place wasn't in last place anymore.
Yeah.
And then somebody else was in last place. So you'd be like, oh, maybe I should vote for them. But some people would kind of like vote off because they didn't want to help the person in last place so much. So anyways, that's the same type of idea. So I thought, instead of us just trying to randomly talk about this, we could try and come up with a cool little game idea that involves positive player interaction. But first, I'll let you do some commenting on it.
Hmm. Is this the intention of this to be a cooperative game where
everyone's?
So it's still a competitive experience.
Yep, it's a competitive experience, but I'm taking actions that are going to benefit another player. So every time I take an action, it's going to help someone else.
Hmm.
Now I get to choose who I help, for instance, say. For this game where you're like, for Puerto Rico, right? My understanding of Puerto Rico is like, I am the guy in charge of the guy next to my left, but the guy to my right is in charge of me. And that's kind of like how the relationship goes in a circle around the board.
Okay.
That's how I understand it. I've never actually played Puerto Rico. I've always wanted to, but that's mm-hmm. what I've heard. So they were actually saying that, like, sometimes that can be broken, right? Because if you are like the lead character, so the person on your left, and they've never played before, but you're like amazing at the game, they're going to probably do all right because you're going to be helping them. And the player to their left is not going to do so great because they're not going to be really helping you because they're bad at the game. So that said, like, I was just trying to think of a scenario where we could, you know, the players could, because I think more than two players, obviously, because... Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't want to just two players with that. Seems kind of lame. But you've got multiple players, and every turn I'm helping someone else in addition to myself. So I was trying to think of a scenario, like, for a game where that could work.
I wonder if there's an election game in that.
That could work?
Where you have different... parties, different political parties, and, you know, maybe it's a four player game and there's two players from each party, you know, and you've got a Republican and Democrat player who are running for president and a Republican and a Democrat that are running for senator.
Might be, just to throw my two cents in here, I like the idea of election game, but what if there were actually four parties and they were fake, right? Four fake parties,
mm-hmm.
and then feeding into those four parties. So they said there's number of parties for the number of players you have, right? So
yeah.
Four player game, four parties, and then each party is backed by groups, like
interest groups.
Unions or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But interest groups always back two parties because they hedge their bets, right?
Okay.
So your goal is to work with interest groups to get votes. But if I work with the unions, say, mm-hmm. both your party and my party is going to benefit from that because we're the two parties they back.
Mm-hmm.
So then the game becomes a idea of who do I, you know what I mean?
Who do you court?
Right.
Yeah.
Knowing that me helping them is going to help you and help me.
Yeah.
So, and if you had like, if there was enough for everyone, so like there's four, so that means that I have four groups backing me. Everybody has four groups backing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that would mean that if there's four players, player one and player two have a group together, one and three, one and four. That would only be three, but you know what I mean. So I guess it'd only be three for each one. Does that make sense? So they'd be in a four-player game. There'd be 9 interest groups. No, sorry, 12 interest groups. Math is so difficult some days.
Yeah, especially after a long day of working and then coming down here and doing this.
Especially because I do math at work.
All day, yeah. brain fatigue. So you want to win the election, and you want to do things...
So
you want to do things that will attract the positive opinions of certain interest groups or encourage negative opinions from interest groups of other players. And you can only ever do something by partnering with another player. Like every action that you're going to perform, you have to partner with another player to do that. And then you will gain the approval of that interest group for both of those players. And you want to try and spread that appreciation around to as many other people. So you get
right.
You get all of it. You get all the approval from all the interest groups, but all their approval for everyone else is just spread around.
Well, and if certain interest groups gave bonuses to specific parties,
yeah.
Then you might say you and I share an interest group, right?
Yeah.
The Gygax group, right?
Sure.
They love both of our parties, right? But you're getting really close to winning the election, and I'm behind.
Because so, the Gygax group they're real big on the Wizards party,
right?
But not too big on the Ogres party,
right? See, exactly, right. So, but they're also big on the Wizards party, and they're big on the Priest party, right? So, because that way the Gygax
Paladins party,
yeah. So the Gygax group really likes. Mm-hmm. Those two parties, and I'm the Paladins and you're the Wizards, mm-hmm. right?
But they hate the Ogres and they hate the Warlocks.
Well, of course, everybody does. So you're about to, well, except for the Axe Guild.
But... The Ogres and the Warlocks are the Republicans.
You're terrible.
I am terrible.
But anyways, so we do not endorse either political party as part of this podcast.
I do.
Just to be clear. I am a moderate. So here's what I'm trying to say. You keep interrupting me.
Sorry. Making jokes.
The Wizard party's about to win, right?
Yeah.
And the Paladin party's like, oh, gosh. Well, Gygax is really helping me out here, but Gygax is about to push you over the top. So I'm going to burn my relationship with Gygax. I'm going to give them a bunch of negative press, right? Which is then going to hurt me, but it's also going to hurt you. Because the Gygax group is losing clout, basically, right? As an interest group.
Oh, I see.
Because I'm making them look bad.
They're losing clout with the voting public.
Right.
I see.
So now their opinion doesn't matter as much. So if I can do that, it hurts me, but it hurts you too.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, yeah, I could see this as a pretty easy to play card game where you've got a board to track what the interest groups are doing.
Yeah.
This is kind of funny with a fantasy theme, right?
Yeah, like, I kind of like it.
The
actually.
Wizards, the Paladins, the Ogres, the Warlocks.
And I maybe different factions' names, but whatever, that works for now.
It's kind of funny, the Wizard Party.
Yeah.
The Paladin Party.
I mean, it could just be, you know, standard classes, Rogue, Wizard, Warrior, Paladin, you know?
Pretty sweet, actually.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Gotta have the Gygax group, though.
The Gygax group.
So they, you know, as these different groups, their opinions rise and fall with the public.
Yeah.
That helps you determine who you want on your side. But some of those groups are always attached to you. So like if I burn the Gygax group in public, I'm still going to look bad because everybody knows that they're funding me.
Right. And if I'm going to lose, and I hate, and I'm the rogue, and right. of course I hate the paladins. And right. if we have an interest group in common, and I know I'm not going to win, I might as well just burn it all to the ground just to make
the crap
sure.
out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to make sure that those darn paladins don't win.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I like that. In fact, you could even have different things built in for like the rogues, you know, like maybe in the end it's not just about winning the election.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a point system, right? Where the election will net you so many points, but other factors, like for the rogues, it could be like if the rogues win, they get X points.
Mm-hmm.
But if the rogues don't win and they can stop the paladins from winning... They yeah. still get X points.
Or you know? Might get bonus points for a specific interest group having high public approval.
Right. In know? Fact, what you could have is multiple offices open. That actually might make it better.
Yeah.
If you have like multiple offices that are open that you can go for, one is like the chancellor or something, right? So that is the one that is worth the most points.
High chancellor of the city.
Yeah. Like, and the other ones are worth smaller points, but like, you know... Like the sewer guild, right?
So
like
if
the rogue might want that.
Well, or no, if the rogue can get elected chief of police.
Right!
Yeah, you know? So that's, yeah. Huh.
That's actually kind of a fun idea.
Right, yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Like what we do on the fly sometimes.
Oh, man. That's not bad at all.
That could be pretty cool.
That's not bad. I could see, and you could have like a map of the city on the board, right?
Yep.
And based on what role you're running for, you're campaigning for, you could place your figure in that spot on the board. And you could change that at any point that you
right.
might want.
But you're campaigning, right?
Yeah,
going
you're campaigning.
To different spots.
Mm.
That's I like that.
That's
man.
Not bad at all.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
Hmm. It's worth further exploration, I believe.
I do think so, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that would be an interesting positive player interaction thing. So,
yeah.
So hey, while we didn't give you like lots of specifics about how that works, we did manage to
come up with an interesting idea.
Cool game idea. So yeah. Hey, there you go. All right.
So yeah, pitch a game, sir. It's time for practicing the pitch featuring Jason Slingerland.
So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell the audience what yeah. I said this morning, which was, so Rob, I think I've got an idea to pitch on the show. Yesterday I was thinking about D&D cosmology a bit. And it made me think of an idea.
And I said, I often lay around thinking about D&D cosmology.
Well, there was I used to, the Manual of the Planes was one of the best source books I've ever read. And I bet I've read it cover to cover probably 5 times.
Wow.
Yeah, no, right? The worlds just really, I thought, were super cool. The different planes and the kind of the cosmology of D&D.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that's changed across the different editions, but yeah. I think I agree with you. It's cool fiction that they've written.
So, and I ran a campaign one time that was kind of people were planes hopping.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this place called the Plane of Mirrors. And then the game had nothing to do with that, but like the Plane of Mirrors, like you go into the Plane of Mirrors, and when you go into the Plane of Mirrors, basically you walk into a mirror, and there's tons of mirrors, and you can exit through another mirror. But as long as you're in there, there's a doppelganger of you in there as well that I think is stronger than you. And it wants its sole purpose when you're in there is for it to kill you.
Oh, interesting.
So your sole purpose is to get out before it can kill you. Because if it can kill you and or incapacitate you, if it can even just incapacitate you, it will walk out another mirror and be you, which sucks for you.
Yeah,
because then you're in the Plane of Mirrors. So anyways, I was thinking about that, and that made me think about like this. There's this place called the City of Doors, and so there's all these doors, and they all lead to places. And then I was like, okay, I want to do something with doors, with doors that are portals, kind of.
Okay.
And I was thinking of all these different ideas, and then I was like, doors. Door number 2. And I was like, that's like a game show. Like, hey, what's behind door number 2, Chuck?
The money hall problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's funny because I was talking to Andy about the city, and the first thing he said was, don't forget the Monty Hall problem, dude.
Yeah.
But I've read about the Monty Hall problem before, and while I still don't understand it, I still can't wrap my little brain around it.
Uh-huh.
I get the whole idea. Look up the Monty Hall problem.
Wikipedia that.
It's super simple. The idea is this.
And it's great.
There's 3 doors. There's a goat behind 2 of the doors, and the last door has a new car. If you pick it, you pick one, and then Monty Hall opens another door for you and says, let's see what's behind door number 3. You've picked door number 2. He says, let's see what's behind door number 3.
Mm-hmm.
He opens door number 3, and of course, there's a goat.
There's a goat.
There is, you know. You have a 66% chance of winning,
If you change your mind,
you change your mind and take the other door,
yeah,
which on the outset is completely counterintuitive
and nonsense,
highly debated, but their math 100% supports it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's stupid. Look at it. In Wikipedia, they actually define it in like 12 different ways with diagrams to try and help people understand it because it's so confusing.
It's crazy and amazing.
But it's true.
Yeah.
So, now, that doesn't mean you're always going to win because if you pick the car
on the
first guess, which you didn't have a very good chance of doing, but if you did, you're going to lose. But you should still do it. It's like doubling down on 11.
Yeah.
Just you do it.
Yeah.
Because you may not win, but you're most likely to win. So, anyways... So that's kind of where I was. So the game of the game is door number two. So first of all, the Curb and Monte Hart problem, my game has four doors.
Okay.
To make that a little easier. And I actually wondered about that for a name as well, is four doors. But so the idea is you are people who want to become adventurers in medieval times, in kind of a D&D-esque setting, a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
You want to become adventurers, but you're just level zero dudes with nothing going on, right? And you're like, oh, I want to be an adventurer, darn it. So so what do? You go on this game show called So You Want to Be an Adventurer, right?
Okay.
And the game show is hosted by a dwarf named Laring Bonebreak. And he's sure. Awesome, right? And he so what he's going to do to you is he's going to present you every turn with four doors.
Mm-hmm.
And each player, so assuming there's a four player game, we'll just do that cuz that's the simplest way. I have ideas for two and three players, but for the easiest for four players, what's going to happen is there's three decks of cards. There is a treasure deck, which is gold. That's your cash, right? Mm-hmm. There is an items deck, which are like magic items. That's your prizes. And then there's a monster deck that if you open the wrong door, it might eat your face.
Okay.
Kind of blows, right? Sure. So here's what happens. Two cards come off the treasure deck. Two cards come off the item deck. One card comes off the monster deck. All those cards are then flipped over so that everyone can see what those cards are. Like, hey, look at these cards. These are kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Or, ooh, that monster looks terrible. And then the cards are shuffled up face down. One of them is discarded.
Mm.
And the other ones are put under the doors, right? So face down. Now, player one, your job is to open a door, right? So player one can blindly pick to open a door. And it just goes down the line, right? If you get cash and prizes, you take it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then you fight the monster, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the other option you have is you can give your door away. You can give your door away.
Okay.
So you can actually say, all right, there's one door left. There has not been a monster open yet, and I feel like the monster's probably in there. And remember, the monster could have been discarded.
Sure.
Statistically speaking, probably not, but he could have been. And you're like, I'm going to give that door to you, Rob. So what happens is Rob has to open the door. Now, if you open the door and it's cash and prizes, all yours, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
If not, guess what?
You got to fight the monster.
You got to fight the monster. Fighting the monster is easy. For every level you have, you roll 1d6. I'm sorry, for every two levels you have, you roll 1d6, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's that simple, right? If you beat the monster, you immediately gain experience.
Monster has a number, a value you have to beat.
Yep. Okay. And so, because like something I was trying to avoid was the Munchkin issue where like, now in Munchkin, it's funny, right? When you get a level 20 monster and you're like level one, it's funny. But in this game, it wouldn't be funny. It would just be annoying.
It would suck, yeah.
So the monster is going to have like ranges. So if you're between levels one and three, it's this bad. So if the monster kills you, you always have a choice. If you lose to the monster, because they're not going to let you die because it's a game show. So your choices are lose all your experience or lose all your stuff. Mm-hmm. So you basically either reset to level one and keep your stuff or lose all your stuff and keep your experience. I give you that choice because it could depends on the player, right? And the strategy you want to use. And like if you're level seven and you have like two items, you might as well lose all your stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the round, after everybody's opened a door, we go back to player one because being player one kind of sucks. So now you're going to get first choice on what to do with your cash. So basically, if you've earned treasure, and I'd kind of like to find a way for people to earn treasure every turn, one way or another.
Maybe if you kill a monster,
right? You get treasure.
You get treasure or XP.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, and actually, it could just be varied by monster. Like some monsters give you XP, some give you treasure.
Yeah,
because you can do two things now. There's five items out, at any time you can buy. They're just equipment. They're not like magical items, but they'll help you mm-hmm. in fighting monsters or doing other things, right? The magical items actually might give you special abilities. Like one magical item might say, you can look at what's behind a door secretly, but then you can't choose that door.
Mm.
Right? So basically it gives you an extra thing to know. I don't know that would be helpful, but something like that, you know, like those types of things, like do this action, but not this. Or you can just take your cash and you can convert it into training, which converts into experience. So you could just basically buy levels for yourself. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you level up pretty quick. The game, I'm not exactly sure what triggers the end of the game. I don't want to be like Munchkin and be like level 20 ends the game. So my thought is you play X number of rounds, and then at the end, the person with the most experience and items wins the game. Cash would count for nothing because mm-hmm. you can't adventure with cash. You gotta yeah. so you want to spend your cash. Sometimes you want to save it, but you want to spend your cash. And you know, and there could be like a secret ending. You could take the monster deck, for instance, and shuffle it up, and then in the last five cards of the monster deck, put the boss monster, mm-hmm. and that monster cues yeah. the end of the game.
I mean, you could just have a certain, you know, X number of rounds. That's kind of game showy too.
That's
game
show yeah.
only has a certain number of rounds. Here's a thought. What if the number of doors that you have to open is always one greater than the number of players?
That's funny, because my original notes say number of doors equals N plus one.
Yeah, and I say that because one of your special powers could be remove a door from play.
Okay.
You know, which would you know, and maybe just completely remove that from play for that round and don't reveal what was on that card.
Right, that's fair.
You know, until the end of the round.
Right. Or even look at a door, choose to remove it from play, right? Like,
so yeah, that way you decide can, yeah. you choose to remove yeah. it or not. Yeah.
Right.
Hmm. And this is 2 to 4?
2 to 4, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So my thought was that if it was 4 doors in a 2-player game is, we take turns opening doors until they're all gone.
Yeah.
In a 3-player game, there was one extra door, and my one thought was player one gets to open a second door because yeah. the player number would rotate. So basically one round, the player gets a bonus, but then again, they don't necessarily get a bonus because it could be a monster.
Could be a
so,
monster, yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple, but that's okay. I mean, it's if it's an adventuring game show, I mean, it's supposed to be kind of goofy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The other thought I had was this. What if you shuffled the cards? You didn't show everyone what was behind the doors. But I kind of like that, right? Because they're like, what's he playing for, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what if instead the card backs were different, right? So like, the card, say there were like, there's like a circle with dots on the thing, right? And each color dot represents a monster or treasure or items, right?
Yeah.
But each card has two dots on it. The back card back does, right? So not unique card backs. I mean, yeah, unique card backs, yeah. So the idea is that when I see that card back, it's either a monster or it's an item, right? And maybe the size of the circle of the colored circle, the size of that tells me how good it would be / how bad it would be.
Oh yeah. Okay. I think I like that in terms of extremity or value.
Right.
Yeah. So that, you know, if you see one dot, you know, it's either going to be a little bit of gold or a easy monster. But if you see three dots, it's a lot of gold or a really strong monster.
Right.
I think I like that.
So then you don't get to see what it is ahead of time. Then it's random what gets drawn. So like, then you could just have one deck basically.
Yeah.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
And you have equal parts, monsters, treasure, and that, you know what I mean? I kind of like that idea. You like that? It gives a little predictability to it.
It'd be nice to make sure that there's a monster in there though.
That's true.
You know, to know for sure that a monster exists.
So how would you handle that? Cause I do feel that way,
mm-hmm.
but with the unique card backs, how would you?
Well, I think you would have your deck of bonuses, they'll call them treasures,
mm-hmm.
Which might be cash, might be special powers,
right?
Or special weapons,
right?
Just treasures in general, and then your deck of monsters. I think you would take, if you're doing four doors, you get three from the one deck and one from the other deck, and you don't show anybody what it is, but you know you took one from that and three from that, and then you shuffle them all together and then put them down.
Right, but my concern is if I somebody has to do that. And the person that does that is going to see what the dots look like on the back of the cards.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know if there's a way around that or not.
Well, okay. You could stack it all in advance. Okay, you have envelopes. And party game setup is just shuffling and randomly dealing out piles.
Right.
You know? And then set them and then slide those into envelopes.
That's a good point. You know? Yeah.
And then that's part of the initial game setup. And then on a round, somebody has to, you know, under the table real quick. That could be tricky though, also because you still have to take them out of the envelopes.
It'd be one of the things I thought when I was reading Andy's email telling us that we need to think bigger. Was what if you had like a cardboard thing that had doors in it, right?
Yeah.
And there was a way to stack the cards behind the doors.
Well, sure. I mean, yeah, you could do that.
So, because here's one thing you could do, right? So, number of players there are, right? So, at the beginning of the game, you have four. Say there's four players, right? So you have four piles, right? So you just
What if you just need one player as the host?
Oh, okay. So just it's a game show, right? Gameplay, right? One player is the host, and the host wins.
The host wins if he can get a monster out to fight somebody on every turn, because that makes for really good ratings.
Yeah, but what this first turn he doesn't get a monster out, then. Plus, you just said there would always be a monster every turn.
Yeah.
And I don't, but there can't be a monster every turn because that's a problem I ran into. Is if there's a monster every turn, then that means that your last player always knows they're getting a monster.
It's important that somebody gets discarded so you don't know for sure.
So that would actually work. Just go back to one deck where it's a mixed deck with unique card backs.
Yeah.
And you just shuffle it all up. And as long as you do the statistics right, you're going to have some turns without monsters. We're going to have some turns with three monsters, right?
Yeah. Now, but that'd be tough, though, because then the host doesn't have any control over that. It's just whatever comes up.
Then there's no host. That's what I'm saying. Well, there's no host.
Yeah, but having a host is nice because then you have somebody to kind of set up the combat or set up the turn.
But you wouldn't. What I'm saying, if you have one mixed deck of cards with unique card backs, but like, nobody's going to memorize all the card backs. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess you could, but there's 90 cards and you memorize all the card backs. You need a hobby. It's not memorizing card backs. So like you just shuffle up, deal three out because there's three doors that turn.
Yeah.
And then put one in behind each door. And then you just, all you can see is, all right, well, door number two has something really good or really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick door number two, Bob. Sorry, Laring. Mm-hmm. Laring Bone Break. Tell him what he's won. Oh, she's a beaut. That's what he'd say if he was like...
Just like that, yeah.
Scottish dwarf.
Bad accent. Why are dwarves always Scottish? I never understood that.
It just fits their surly personality.
I guess it does.
Not that there's anything wrong with Scottish people.
No.
Tim Cooper. I think he was Scottish.
Right. So, I'm kind of hung up on the idea of having a host, though. I think that's cool.
I like the idea of having a host. That's cool. That could even be an alternate play style, where like you could have a host.
Yeah. That'd be real fun if you could have a host. And he, of course, the host would win if the audience is having a good time. He just needs to make it a good show.
Well, the host could have to, like, before someone wins, he has to kill X players.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would be easy. It's like, meaning, like, if you die, you come back, right? But, like, he has to take out of the game five players.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think what you do then is I think that the host has to draw three treasure cards and one monster card, okay? And then he puts them into the doors, and then he has to kind of wheel and deal with the contestants, with the players, to say, don't pick that. Oh, do you want it? You know, so he's trying to convince them to choose the monster.
Right. So, yeah, that could be cool.
You know?
And what if the host just has to take out every player once, right? Because then here's what you start to get, right?
There you go.
You got five players playing, right?
Yeah.
And we've all died except for you, Rob.
Yeah.
And so, like, I use my power to look at a thing, and I'm like, Rob, don't pick the door. Because we don't want you to die, because if you die, right, the host wins.
So he either wants to kill every player once or one player three times.
Right. Yeah.
think that could be. I think that's okay. I think that could work.
That'd be fun. Yeah,
adds an interesting social kind of negotiation sort of thing to it. Some role playing.
Right.
Yeah, I think that could be a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, I like it.
Hmm. And then maybe the I think the host doesn't have to reveal what the prizes are.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Or the host could choose to reveal one prize, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Hmm. And it would admit you could do, I think you'd have to do like 3 to 5 players then, which is a little tricky because it'd be nice to make it 2-player. You could have a 2-player variant probably somehow, but right. whatever.
I don't know. I might, if I was going to do a game like that, I might have include a variant where it was just everyone played. And yeah. It was just the deck was pre-stacked, or the host could, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Because I really do like the idea of one mixed deck, and you don't know what's in there. Like, So, like, when you're looking at that, you're like, oh, gosh, this could be 3 freaking monsters.
You know, one of the powers then could be that the host has to turn his back, and the player has to switch, too, so the host doesn't know what to be switched.
Nice.
You know?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Because that'd be a good way to screw with the host.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's cool. We got to move on, though, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, hey, we got a couple voicemails here we're going to listen to.
Hi, Rob and Jason. This is James, your buddy from Solaris Games. Just wanted to call in and call you guys out for not recognizing the contributions I've made to the offset card system with that frame design. I realize you guys are probably pretty busy, so... I was just curious if you had any thoughts on that. Also, I want to pitch in a suggestion for your guys' time game. As you were describing the clock face, it kind of made me think about the cards you had arranged there on like a little playboard or something like that. And I was almost wondering if that could be maybe like stacks of cards, each with like a number on the back of them. And whenever you move the hands or come to that space, you take the top card from that stack and do whatever it says on it. And as you're playing the game, you're trying to whittle down and manage those stacks, like moving cards between them or... using them in different ways, and then when those stacks run out, then you can no longer go to that space, and if hands ever end up on that space on your turn, then the game's over. That triggers the same condition and whatever end effects that has. So I was just thinking about that, maybe instead of having individual cards, considering some stacks and seeing where that could take you creatively. Anyway, I wish you guys the best of luck, and I hope that everything goes well with your competition. Thank you.
All right, Rob, you're up.
Yeah, James. I appreciate the feedback that you've sent to me. I kind of feel like I made my feelings pretty clear a while ago about the offset card system. That I'm kind of done with that. I feel like I've explored everything that I care to explore with it, and that I couldn't make it the way I hoped that it would. And if you have some ideas for it, more power to you. And I encourage you to pursue that. I certainly don't have any copyright or any restriction on that. So best of luck to you with that. But I'm done with it, and I'm kind of done talking about it, honestly.
Rob hates the offset card system now. And those are interesting ideas about the time game. I kind of like the idea of stacking the cards and taking them. We'll have to think about that. That's pretty cool.
Sure.
And we've got one more here.
Rob, Jason, Len, how's it going? So, listening to last week's one I just listened to today, the one from 2 weeks ago when you talked about the time travel game, talked about Time Slime. I think the name needs to be changed, but that's just me. I was thinking that the idea is you're talking about manipulating the cards. You can have like 4 to 6 actions, draw a card, play a card, maybe change the time, and some other actions. I don't know. I'd think about that. And on your turn... the slime time change is how many actions you can do. Like in the beginning of the game, you get 1 action, right? You can draw a card, you can play a card, you can affect time, you can do something like that. And you're affecting how many of these actions you can do on a turn. And then when the next person goes, they get to use the time that you set. So there's a little bit of a, do you want to give the next person, a lot of actions? Because then they might be able to manipulate it to where you don't get actions. Not sure. Anyways, something to think about. Probably too late, but whatever. Next thing is, listening to today's show, and you were talking about Unpub and what games take and how you hate some of the games. And I started thinking about one of my friends who's a writer, and she was talking about how sometimes she'll hate a book, or she like lives, like you live in the book, or you live in whatever you're talking about so long that you like, not only loathe it, but you hate it, or dislike it a lot. Maybe loathe's a good word. So I'm just gonna shelve it. Give it 3 weeks, come back to it and say, you know, it's still worth something. So, and also, you know, Jason said, don't take one game to unpublish, you get sick of playing it. Why not just take six and play all of them once and then really play the one that is hit with, you know, a lot of people? Because there's something you hate because you've been in it so long, but then when you take it out in public and you play it, it's new to the people that are seeing it for the first time. They're like, wow, this is interesting, and you can get some good feedback. It might spark your interest again. Hope that makes sense. So take as many games as possible, and I know, you know, there's only certain games you play a day, but, you know, every day play just these two, or, you know, maybe play some of the ones that you're not playing at night on the side, if possible, and, you know, see something sparks up. Just a thought. Yeah, keep it up. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Len. I think we've talked about that idea before, too, where you just, you know, sometimes you just need to set something down and let it sit for a bit and come back to it when your brain is fresh and you're ready to go again.
Yeah, and it's good advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Unpub, it's a little stressful taking that many games because you want to have your games at least looking decent for new playtesters, because you've got a lot of playtesters that aren't designers. So
yeah,
they expect games that look a little nicer. So that can be really tough, trying to make six games that look nice. It's possible. It's not impossible, but you know, I probably won't bring more than three, and that third one will be one I never bring out during the day. I'll just have it at night to show to pals and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. I think that's all we got.
Cool. Well, thanks for those messages, gentlemen. And thanks, everybody out there, for listening to the show. We appreciate it, as always. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_designed. You can also call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can like us on Facebook and give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and pick up our games. Buy our games. Water Balloon Washout. You can get a link to that. You can buy that online at our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. You can also get my games from the Game Crafter. That's Epic Monster Tea Party, the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, and finish it, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. I have to say it that way. You can get all those in Game Crafter, and it's good stuff. And what have I forgotten? Did I forget anything?
You were never forgetting anything. You're all right. So smart.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Sure.
This is completely unrelated to games in any way whatsoever. But
oh, that's exciting. I'm excited.
But, you know,
the listeners are really excited.
This is our show, so we can do whatever we want. And we,
it's true.
And we know before customers like, or customers? Jeez, man, I've been at work too long. Listeners like it when we just complain about crap. So I got a new roof on the house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it pretty?
Oh, yeah, it looks great. Yeah. The roofers, it took like from the day, all right, so you get an estimate and the guy comes out and gives an estimate and you hum and haw and talk about it because, man, that's a lot of money. And like 2 weeks later, you say, okay, we shake hands, and the guy drives to our house, and I give him my credit card, and he takes my money, and I sign a piece of paper, and then he disappears for 6 weeks. And he says, yeah, we'll get in touch with you in the end of October, maybe early November, I don't know.
Makes you feel really good.
Yeah, so I guess I signed something.
Did you pay like half up front?
Yeah, 50% down. So, it got to be the end of October, and it snowed. You know,
right.
And so I'm like, it's snowing, and I still have a new roof. And so I called and said, hey, guys, it's been like 5 weeks and I haven't heard from anybody. Just wondering if I'm on your schedule yet. And, well, you should call our project manager. So I call a project manager and I leave him a message. Anyway, so the guy called me back and said, yeah, well, you know, what are you doing tomorrow? Like, if you have time tomorrow, then why don't you call me and tell me when you have time? Actually, we're going to have a guy and you're doing another house on your road. Why don't you just tell me? If you have an opening in your schedule and you know that I've given you a lot of money. Why don't you just tell me?
Right.
I have to call you? All right. So that was frustrating. Anyway, so I took the day off work last Friday.
Right.
And so that I could be home while these guys are crawling over my house. I know I didn't need to be, but I wanted to be.
That's fair.
You know? So these guys, they show up an hour late. Like, the guy shows up to drop off the dumpster, and the crew there that's supposed to help him drop off this dumpster is not there yet. So I'm out there, you know, holding power lines up with the 2x4 so the guy can drive under him and helping him, you know, line up the truck so he can drop off the dumpster in my driveway. And this guy shows, oh, yeah, we'll be done with this today. Yeah, no problem. I'm a piece of cake. And I mean, to their credit, they were out there till, like, you know, 7 o'clock at night. And it's getting dark here in Michigan at, you know, 5:30.
Right.
So they were out there.
And your roof is tall.
Yeah, it's tall. Yeah, and steep. So it's not big or complicated, but it's tall and it's steep. So I mean, to their credit, they were still up there finishing the job while it was dark out.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, and so then the last thing they had to do is we got to seal around the chimney and it's dark and we don't really want to do that. And I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. So we'll be back tomorrow. Or this was a Friday again. We'll be back tomorrow, but if the weather's bad, we'll be back on Monday. Okay, that's fine. Well, they didn't come on Saturday. It wasn't raining. It was a little damp and it was cold, but they didn't come on Saturday. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, I guess they're going to come on Monday. I guess that's fine. Well, they show up about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. Two guys just pull in the driveway and start hauling their tools out and climbing up on my roof. Like, you didn't say you were going to come on Sunday, all right? Right. I didn't know to expect that you were coming on Sunday.
Right.
So, come on, guys.
Right.
But okay, hey, they came out on Sunday. That's fine. And I said, yeah, yeah, and the dumpster guy will be the pick up the dumpster on Monday. You know, we're all done. We'll set here. Of course, they left. They didn't say, hey, we're leaving. They just disappeared.
Right.
I looked out the window. I'm like, oh, hey, their truck's gone. So
are they coming back? I don't know.
I don't know. But there sure is a lot of garbage all around my house that they left. And not like just roofing debris, but like, you know, like soda cans and, you know, a box of donuts and plastic wrappers and stuff. And there's a freaking big dumpster right there. And you just,
right.
You set the cup on my porch next to the dumpster.
You're too nice, dude. I had to take pictures of all that stuff and sent them to the person.
And there's a pile of aluminum in the yard. And I know they set the aluminum aside to be recycled, right? Okay.
Right.
Do something with it. and I think, you know, all right, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. It's a Sunday. Tomorrow, today, you know, so today, right. This is a Monday we're recording this. So but when I get home from work on Monday, though, it's all going to be gone. Well, we got home from work tonight. Wasn't gone.
Dumpster's gone?
Dumpster's still there.
Oh, okay.
All the garbage is still there. The pile of aluminum. It's actually, the pile of aluminum is technically in my neighbor's yard. And I'm amazed he hasn't complained about that yet. My neighbor's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that guy normally complains about everything.
Well, it's the other guy.
Oh, okay.
The other neighbor. Yeah. So the other thing is that I get the job was it ended up being more. They estimated for 2 layers to tear off the roof, and they had to tear off 4 layers. That's going to be more money, you know.
4 layers.
Yeah. It was a bad roof.
It's not even good, man.
Yeah. And they had to do more repair work than they expected to. So, and Christine and I were prepared for that. We're like, right. You know, we can expect some overruns here.
Right.
But it was offset because they didn't have to replace a flat roof on the house. You know, so the guys are like, well, you know, we don't have to replace that flat roof, so that'll offset some of your costs. And I thought, oh, hey, that's great. You know, we can balance some of that out. And so I emailed the sales guy sent me an invoice today saying, hey, here's the extra costs for the repairs and the tear off. And I said, hey, okay, well, what about the flat roof? No response. And then I get a bill from their billing department that adds all the extra stuff.
Doesn't subtract
the discount and only gives us credit for half of the down payment. I was so mad. I was so mad. I sent a very strongly worded email, of course. And by the end of the day, they sent me an updated invoice, and that was fine. So they were okay with that. But then I got home from work, and there's still garbage all over my yard and a big dumpster sitting in my driveway. So I made a nasty phone call, and I don't know how it's going to shake out. But I'm just really pissed off about this.
Yeah, I understand. That's frustrating.
I'm really pissed off about this. And I'm wasting people's time on this podcast complaining about this.
It's not the first time.